We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, everybody, to the award-winning RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast. It is Friday, September 23rd, 2022. Alex Berutha here with Shannon McEwen. Ken, the K-Train Kreitz, out today. He is traveling, so fans of Ken should just immediately turn off the podcast now and wait till next week.
All right, we lost one listener. All right, let's go.
Let's dive right into it. We're going with the top 10 overrated players, busts, if you will, guys who are being drafted too high this draft season. It's pretty early still, but I think this is a good time to identify some guys who are being overdrafted. Shannon, let's have you kick things off with your first bust pick of the early draft season.
Well, let's go large. Joel Embiid, you know, going right in that number 3, 4, 5 range, top five in every draft I've been a part of, at least. I can't do it, man. I can't do it. I feel like this year you have a clear cut top three, at least, you know, specifically in best ball, that's definitely the case for points based leagues. Jokic, Giannis, and Luka. You know, that order can adjust a little bit. I believe Jokic, no matter the format, is going to be the top overall pick. But once you get past those three, you know, you've got Embiid is really the guy. And I can't pull the trigger on Embiid with the fourth pick or top five pick. I'm going to go Tatum 99 out of 100 times if I have that spot. You know, Embiid's great. You know, per game basis, as valuable as any other player in fantasy, but especially in the first couple of rounds, the amount of games played that you're projecting for a player matters. Embiid played a career high 68 games last year. You know, hopefully he can at least match that, maybe play more. That would be fantastic. But until I see him play 75 games, it's hard for me to justify selecting him with a top five pick.
I agree. I will say if you are in a more old school two center league, I can understand drafting Embiid top five, although that also bumps up the value of every other center and you could just wait and draft another center later. But yeah, I agree with you, Shannon. I mean, I think this is a case of there are some guys who are relatively injury prone throughout their career. And then they have like one especially healthy year and people are like, all right, he's good now. This happened with like Michael Porter, missed his entire rookie season. Two years ago, had a pretty healthy season. And then people are like, maybe he's just not that injury prone. And then they draft him. He plays like 11 games. This past season where he played 68 games was the only time in Embiid's career where he's ranked better than 13th in total eight cap value. So for most of his career, he's a guy you should be drafting at the turn and then hoping you get that value out of him. I agree. Too injury prone for me at the start of the draft. This is also coming from a guy who I've been drafting, Kevin Durant, because he keeps slipping to me at pick like 8. But at that point, you know, again, if Embiid were to slip to you at the turn, then that's where you take him.
Right.
But we're talking about guys at their ADP who are overdrafted, and I'm with you. I'm not drafting Embiid at like 5.
Yeah. He's still worthy of a top 10 pick, you know, no matter the format, but top 10 is different than top five. And if I have a top five pick, again, it's just hard for me to justify. I also worry, it's not just about games played with Embiid. I also do worry about the presence of Harden for the entire season. So this isn't the same as playing alongside Ben Simmons, who never shoots the ball, right? You've got another high volume shooter on your team, and that doesn't even factor in Tobias Harris, Tyrese Maxey. Like, they have four dudes who can fill it up. And there's going to be plenty of games where Embiid doesn't have to put forth the MVP runner-up type campaign that he did last year.
They have a really strong team this year. Could give them even more leeway than usual to sit Embiid. The first bust that I am taking, or I am noting, is Karl-Anthony Towns. I mentioned this on the pod before. He's going at 7 on Yahoo. He currently just went 5th in a draft that I'm doing. I loved him there in the past. I've been a guy banging the drum for Towns in the past, saying he's one of the most underrated fantasy players of the past 5 years, maybe at least of the elite guys. Consistently ranks. He's ranked 8th like 3 times in his career. Ranked 3rd before. Ranked 11th last year. I'm just worried about the Gobert addition. I think it's going to mess up his rebounding, which was already at a career low, 9.8. Towns' assists decreased almost by a full assist last year compared to the year before with the emergence of Anthony Edwards. I think Anthony Edwards' stock continues to go up. He will get more usage. It's hard to say because the numbers translate so differently, right? You're thinking Towns, he's going to be less in the interior. He's shooting more threes. How does that sort of thing translate from a field goal percentage to three-pointers made perspective? Again, I'm worried about his blocks where those were at a career low, 1.1 already last year. I get it. I get wanting to draft Towns in the first round. I'd still consider him roughly at the turn, but I'm worried he could have his first worst fantasy season, which for him would still be like 20th. But right. I'm worried about the Gobert edition.
Yeah, there's a couple concerns with Towns. I am still fine taking him at the turn. I agree. I think 7. Is a little bit too high, you know, for the reasons you mentioned. And even if looking at just last year without Gobert on the team, Towns was already at 9.8 rebounds, career low. The shooting percentage, if he does step out and play on the perimeter more, the shooting percentage it's going to go down. You know, he is a very good three-point shooter, 41% from downtown last season. 41, and we haven't projected for just under 42% from downtown this year. But that is going to lower his field goal percentage, which was at 53%. It's tough. Extra value for three-pointers made, sure. But I also don't know that he's a lock to lead this team in scoring. I expect Anthony Edwards to take another step forward. And with that, he could be the guy who's actually the go-to scorer for this team.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, Towns should still get run at center. I think that's kind of the hope for a lot of people. It's like, well, he'll just play back up center. I think that's true. I mean, their team is so thin that I think he will get, you know, 10, 15 minutes at backup center, but I'm not sure that will necessarily help his rebounding enough. Who's your next guy, Shannon?
All right. A fan favorite, LeBron James. I've seen LeBron James go pretty much anywhere in the first round. His value and his ADP varies from site to site a little bit. It is right around 12 or 13 on season redraft leagues for ESPN, Yahoo, Fantrax. Best ball, underdog, he's going around 8.5 for ADP. You could justify taking him at the turn there in the 12-team league. Taking him at 8 or 9, I feel like, is quite the reach. And it's a very similar thought process as to my Embiid pick. And I can't justify spending a first-round pick on a player who may only play 65 games. He's entering his age 37 or 38 season. He's still playing tons of minutes. He's great when he is on the court, but he played 45 and 56 games the past 2 years. So it's hard for me to project him for more than 65 at this point. I feel like that even that's almost optimistic. And with that in mind, I'm not picking LeBron James with a top 15 pick, maybe not top 20. There's too many other really good players. Yeah, I saw a comment on Twitter earlier this week where there are 30 top 20 players in fantasy hoops this year, and that's pretty much how I feel about it as well. So there are just too many other good options for me to go with LeBron with the top 20 pick.
Yeah, you mentioned LeBron's missed games, has played 223 games in 4 seasons with the Lakers. Obviously he had a great year per game last year. No one's denying that. He ranked 4th, right? But ended up being 16th overall in his 56 appearances. That would be lower in a normal season, except I even forget this sometimes. Last year, COVID was still messing things up at the beginning of the year. Like, Joe Johnson played for the Celtics last year. That happened. So I'm with you on that. He went early second round in the draft. I did. I think that's fine, and maybe even a little late. That depends on how you feel. But a lot of this also does come down to the minutes, because last year he played so well, but he played 37 minutes a game, which is ridiculous for obviously a 37-year-old. The years before that, 2020-21, he played 33. Before that, 35. I know the roster's thin. I don't know what's going on with Westbrook. If they pull him back down to like 33 minutes a game and they rest him here and there, maybe he gets hurt again, plays like 60 games, I'm with you. It just can't happen that he's like going to rank 8th or something per game, or probably won't. My next guy, DeJounte Murray, who's pretty consistently going 25th on like every single site, which is kind of bizarre to me that a lot of sites, they're not aligned like this, but everyone's like 25. Let's do it. Grab DeJounte Murray. Ranked 12th last year, being the number one option for the Spurs, who were absolutely tanking and absolutely trying to feature him as a point guard. I will say, I don't see any reason that his steals numbers should decrease. That was 2 steals a game last year. However, he's playing next to another point guard now in Trae Young, who's one of the most high usage players in the NBA. Maybe they play Trae Young off ball a little bit more. I think that will happen, but I don't think it's going to happen a ton. And DeJounte Murray himself is not a great floor spacer, which creates its own issues. So I expect DeJounte Murray's both his points and assists to decrease. And an important part of his fantasy value last year is he was grabbing 8.3 rebounds per game for a relatively weak front court. Now he's in a front court with Clint Capella, who's a dominant rebounder. Okongwu comes off the bench. He's a good rebounder. You have John Collins up there, who's grabbing boards as well. So there's a chance DeJounte Murray slips back down to like 6-7 boards a game in addition to lower points and assists. I'm not saying you have to wait till like pick 70 to draft DeJounte Murray, which is where he ranked like the prior 2 years. But I'd rather get him at like that 30-ish to 40 range. That's where I'd feel more comfortable and where I feel like he'll settle during the season.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're rarely going to land Murray if that's what it takes, which is fine. You know, that's your choice. I am not personally as worried about Murray just because he was so dominant last year with San Antonio. I expect to see a step back, but if he's still 18-6-6 or 18-7-7 in that range with elite steals numbers, and my guess is they're going to have him working on his 3-point shot quite a bit as well. I also think this team could benefit from playing Trey off the ball a little bit and getting him some open shots to space the floor. So I think there's still going to be top 25 production from Murray, even with the step back. So I'm not grabbing him in the top 25 usually. It's rare. I've maybe done it once or twice in a best ball draft. But if he drops to the 30 range and I'm targeting guard there, I have no issues grabbing him there.
Yeah, the problem to me, I feel like 25 is a ceiling. And I don't like drafting players at their ceiling. I feel like there's always someone there who 25 might be closer to their floor, and I would just rather grab him there. But I get it. Steals production could be there. They play Trae Young off the ball more. Things are fine. Your next bust, Shannon, is one of my fantasy darlings, unfortunately. A guy I love to draft, but I understand why you have him on this list.
He's a super fun player to draft and a regular player on about half my teams, it feels like, in the past few years. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA for the Thunder. Yeah, it's the same reasons why he didn't live up to the hype last year that concerned me this season. You know, once Chet Holmgren went down with injury and the news came out that he was going to miss the season, I immediately downgraded SGA and pretty much anyone on the Thunder, SGA and Giddy, at least, the two building blocks for the team. I just see the Thunder, once again, tanking. And there's plenty of reasons to tank for next year's draft. SGA's already dealing with an injury. He's already got a knee issue, and it looks like he might not be ready for the start of the season. I was worried about the shutdown potential before that knee injury. Now with that, it's pretty much a lock. I mean, if I'm picking between SGA or Murray in that 25 to 30 range, I'm going Murray every time for the health reason. I understand SGA has higher upside, especially now that Murray's in Atlanta, but there's too much injury risk and just general tank risk where a guy like SGA is going to get shut down.
Yeah, I agree with you. The upside is definitely higher. That would be a hard choice for me, Murray versus SGA. I think that's a good question. But we should expand on the injury a little bit. It's a grade 2 MCL sprain. Suffered it during a recent workout, but said that he was able to finish the session and did not feel any pain. And then the next morning he woke up and they're like, "This kind of hurts." And then they gave him an MRI. That was that. So it seems like he'll be ready for the start of the regular season. But again, why would you rush him back? So if he misses the first 2 weeks of the season, nobody should be surprised. And at that point, you can't draft him exactly where he's going. You don't want to downgrade a guy too much for missing like the first 2 weeks of the year, kind of like a Chris Middleton situation. But I'm with you on that. There's very strong chance he's a bust again this year, especially where he's being drafted. As good as a lot of us know that he is as a real life player, it's a tough pick to make.
I'd say he's a little less risky. If you're in a league that ends the season early, you end on March 31st instead of April 15th, 2 or 3 weeks early, his value is a little bit higher. But the odds of him playing basically like the last 10 games of the season are astronomically low.
Yeah, any league that I set up, I have end on March 31st. I'm like, we shouldn't have to deal with whatever's going on in April. That doesn't feel real. But yeah, like that's a good point to make. If your league ends early, and if you're in a best ball where you don't have to worry about like, oh, I'm stopping guys in and out, guys like SGA who could get periodic rest, or even like Kawhi Leonard, for example, those guys get a little bit of a bump up in value because you don't have to worry about them getting hurt on a Monday and then you get zeros.
A little bit. I mean, even for best ball, though, definitely mind the schedule. See when the, you know, if you're in a big tournament for best ball, you need a lot of those guys to be healthy and available to play and contribute to your lineup for the last couple weeks of the season. So it depends on the schedule for best ball as well.
Yeah. My next boss, Christian Wood, who I think everybody has mixed feelings on at this point, because I thought that when they brought him into Dallas that he would be the number two option to Luka Doncic. And then all of a sudden it's actually JaVale McGee is going to start. And Dorian Finney-Smith is also going to start. And Christian Wood's coming off the bench now. And that worries me, because I can't remember who said it, was a beat reporter on a podcast, said that the idea of Jason Kidd is that he wants Christian Wood to prove it, that he can buy in on defense before he puts him in on the starting lineup. That should be a concern for everybody interested in drafting Christian Wood. Now, at some point, I do think he's too talented and this team is relatively shallow, and he'll still end up playing. If he plays less than 28 minutes a game, I will legitimately be shocked. But the thing is, he ranked 74th last year in 31 minutes a game for a team where they just kind of let him do whatever he wants. I know Kevin Porter and Jalen Green were there, but Christian Wood had a lot of leeway in those 31 minutes. This year, I don't know as much with Doncic there. Jason Kidd's obviously like a real coach who has a system in place, wants things done on a two-way perspective. Wood's going between 45 and 65 this year. He's going earlier than he ranked last year. I can't do it. I got to draft him later than he ranked last year, which was 74th. I guess there's a possibility he becomes more efficient getting those passes from Doncic. I don't love it.
Yeah, no, I understand the worry with it. You know, it would be a lot easier to stomach where he's going right now if he were a lock to start. I still think that they may change their mindset on that and move him into the starting lineup. I don't feel like JaVale McGee should truly be a starting center for a team that wants to be a contender. Maybe that's there's the same thought about Christian Wood, but he's better than McGee. With Wood, I'm not comfortable taking him top 50, but if he drops to the 60 range, you know, some formats like Underdog, Fantrax, he's going in the 63, 64 range as opposed to 55 and 46 for Yahoo. If it's that 60, 65 range, I'm more comfortable selecting him. I do think he will still play about 30 minutes per game. And we saw what he did, you know, 18 and 10 with 31 minutes per game last year in Houston. So there's still upside. It's just a little bit, a little bit softer upside, lower upside than what you'd like for a player who has scored 21 points per game in the past 2 years.
Is he the first bench player off the board in fantasy? He must be, right? At this point.
Yeah, I believe so.
I can't really imagine anybody else. I guess that's about the range that you would reach up for like a really strong bench guy, 50, 60. Tyler Hero might come off the bench still, and he's going in like that 60 range. But that, I digress. Shannon, who is your next bust?
All right, we're going to go back to Philly. Tyrese Maxey. Maxey's a fine player. He's got a pretty high floor. You know, he took a step up last year, averages of 17.5, 3.2 rebounds, 4.3 assists. Not doing a ton on the defensive side, 0.7 steals in 35 minutes per game, but good percentages. Also doesn't really – 1.83 is solid. I would like to see him come up, hit more. His efficiency, actually, his three-point shot was much improved last year, almost 42.7%. I just want to see higher volume from him. I like Maxey as a player. I think he's fine. I think he's going to be good. My worry here is similar to Embiid. Yeah, not the games played aspect, but the fact that you have Tobias Harris, you have Joel Embiid, and you have James Harden on this team. you know, Tyrese did fairly well. His scoring actually went up after Harden joined the team last year, but a lot of his other stats, including assists, went down. I think we're going to see Tyrese Maxey have trouble replicating the value he had last year. You know, I think he's still going to be solid overall, you know, have 16, 17 points, maybe 4.5 assists or so. But at the range he's going in the draft, that 60 to 70 range, there are much better options that have much higher ceilings, in my opinion, like Jamal Murray, like Kellen Sexton. Those are probably the two guys I'm definitely targeting over him. Jalen Brunson's another guy going in a similar range. Those are all guys with much higher ceilings this year. So it's more about I'm avoiding Maxey given his current ADP. If he drops to like the 75-80 range and those other guards are off the board, then I like him a lot more.
Yeah, those other guys you mentioned, Brunson, Sexton, Jamal Murray, those guys are number one or number two options on their team. And Maxey's a third option.
Maybe.
And he's a very good I love Maxey long term. I think he's like actually an excellent player. But I think your concerns are valid. You know, he's great from the free throw line. He's pretty efficient from the field. The three pointers, I've heard some people say maybe that's not as real. But yeah, I think drafting him super high, you know, in that like 50-ish range, don't love it. I think there are guys with higher upside for this season. But I think both of us agree in like a dynasty league, if you can get your hands on him and, you know, have him for the next 3, 4, 5 years, there's probably a lot of upside coming out the other end.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just that if where he's going right now, you know, you're drafting him hoping that he has seasons that Jamal Murray and Colin Sexton have already had.
Right.
And they've already had those seasons and good. They're in good position to have those seasons again this year. And even a guy like Jalen Brunson, who was pretty fantastic for the Mavs last year, even though his role wasn't as large at the beginning of the season as it was at the end. I mean, he's going to be handed the keys for the Knicks. And yeah, they have RJ Barrett. Yeah, they have Julius Randle. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Brunson's the best fantasy option from that Knicks roster this year.
Next up, Russell Westbrook. Huge variation in ADP based on where you're drafting. Understandable if you're in a points league versus a roto league, why this would be the case, given his awful free throw shooting. Not even just free throw shooting. He's just a terrible shooter, point blank at everything. Last year averaged, terrible year last year in roto, ranked like 101st per game. Points leagues, 37 fantasy points a game. So still good. I understand why his ADP is, he's going between like 40 and 85, depending on the site that you look at. Still, I don't believe in a Russell Westbrook revival tour. I think that, you know, I don't know if he's going to come off the bench or not. They're obviously trying to trade him. I've heard some people speculate that if he gets traded, he's basically out of the league or we'll have to settle for like a true six man, like 24 minutes a game role. I don't know if that's true. Whether or not it is, the fact that people are seriously considering it and there's not real pushback on that tells you the point at which Westbrook is in his career. I could not draft him higher than 75. To me, that's suicide in fantasy. In points leagues, maybe, but again, it's so risky. A guy the team actively dislikes and does not want on the roster.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. In points leagues, I will draft him in that 75 range, but any earlier than that, I'm going to go with any of the options that we just discussed. You know, any of those guards, even Maxey, I'm going to go with any of them instead. And then, like, his ADP in ESPN 40 is just absurd. You know, underdog, points-based, best ball league, I get it with 47. But he probably should be in that 75 to 85 range, which is what we're seeing on Yahoo and Fantrax. You know, even our mock draft that we did on Fantrax, I picked him with 115, at pick 115. And I understand why, like, that's a rotisserie league. Yeah. You know, it totally makes sense. I did not want to pick him, but at 115, I feel like he's an absolute steal. Would I had zero interest picking him, you know, any sooner than that, though. So, you know, that was just one where at that point of the draft, I was forced to pick him. But top 80, no, I'll let someone else do that for standard leagues. Best ball, I'm still comfortable doing 70 or 80.
The 85 rank on Yahoo is shocking, since that's 9 cat and Westbrook's a turnover machine. Right. I don't really understand that one. But I don't think I'm saying anything that's too controversial here. Yeah. Okay. Who is your last bust, Shannon?
I'm going to go with Wendell Carter, Orlando Magic. Nothing against Carter. I think he's a solid player. It was nice to see him kind of fulfill some of that promise last year. He averaged 15, 10.5, 1.1 three-pointers made. Oddly, though, his defensive stats went down. 0.6 steals, that's right about his career norm, but 0.7 blocks while playing a career-high 29.8 minutes. Without the, you know, in that type of playing time, I would have expected about 1.5 blocks per game, so twice as many as what he actually finished with last season. Without the blocks, it's harder for me to get too excited about Carter, and that's before we even take a look at the Magic's depth chart. You know, Franz Wagner busted out last year. You got the number one overall pick of the draft coming in. Mo Bamba's still there. Mo Wagner's still there. Okiki, Jonathan Isaac's going to probably, hopefully, return this season. There's a lot of players in that front court. And while Carter is probably still considered a long-term piece, or, you know, one of the main long-term pieces for the Magic, I don't think he's necessarily at where he was when they acquired him a year and a half ago. I don't know. I'm worried. I'm worried that there's too many other pieces. If Mo Bamba, if just one of those pieces wasn't factored in, you know, like Mo Bamba not being re-signed, I would feel better about selecting Carter. But right now, picking him with top 100 or picking him somewhere in the 90 to 100 range feels way too risky, especially for a center who doesn't really block shots.
The front court in Orlando is loaded. So you got to be careful when you are thinking about drafting guys there. Now I'm not as worried about like Banchero minutes wise, because he's just going to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Okiki, Isaac, Bamba situation. Even Terrence Ross is still on this team. You know, they might have to feature him to trade him. The Wendell Carter thing, I think his blocks, they may have had a out on the perimeter a little bit more last year while sending Bamba at the rim. I'm someone who's personally down on Bamba this year. I think people are really mixed. People are really mixed on that opinion. I think Bamba is going to actually just be like a straight up backup center this year. They were really hesitant on trying to sign him. There was rumors that like the Rockets were interested, and then they just backed away, and basically the Magic waited until the very last minute. We're like, all right, I guess we'll resign you, because maybe we can trade you for like 2 seconds later. So I'm not as worried about Carter as you are, but at the same time, he did gain a lot of his value through like almost 3 assists a game, and Fultz is coming back, and Banchero is a ball handler. So if Carter's assists go back down to like 2, 1.5, something like that, then yeah, I mean, his value, especially if he can't get the blocks back, it's going to decrease.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I actually go as far. I will not draft Mo Bamba. Like he has to drop to a ridiculously low point, like beyond one, probably like 160, 170. Like I could be in a deep league. Most 10 team and 12 team leagues aren't deep enough for me to draft Mo Bamba. I don't think he's going to have any kind of role he'll have an off the bench role, but I fully expect his playing time to take a significant hit for that team. I mean, he played 25.7 minutes per game. I wouldn't be surprised if it reverts back to the 15 minutes per game we saw his first 3 seasons.
Yeah, post 150, I think makes sense. But the thing is, after 150, you're basically just taking guys who are like, per minute, these guys are great. So if the guy ahead of him gets hurt and he starts, then I'm in. You know what I mean? And a lot of that's best ball situations. So, yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. I agree with you. 150 plus, I get it, just from a per-minute standpoint. My last bust, Mikal Bridges. He's going between like 65, 85. I'm fine drafting him around that 85 range. I think that's good value for him, even pushing 75. Don't like him at 65. He went in the fifth round in a draft that I'm currently doing. But he's a very good player. They signed him to a huge deal. Obviously, they like him, but he is a role player, and he's not even that great of a three-point shooter. I think the perception of Mikal Bridges is like, this guy's a marksman, like 3-and-D. He made 1.4 threes per game last season. His career high was 2 years ago at 1.9, shooting 43%. That looks more like an aberration than what's going to be the norm for him. Maybe he gets back up there. But I don't see where the extra usage comes from that really vaults him up anymore. If anything, I think Cam Johnson is going to be the guy to take on more usage. And even in the playoffs, I mean, they didn't feature Mikal Bridges at all. He averaged 13 points a game in 38 minutes. So I think this is a guy, he's reliant. He's a 3-and-D player who doesn't really generate a lot of stats in either steals or threes. And he's a perfect example of a guy who is immensely more valuable in real life than fantasy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, it comes down to his offensive upside. Is it much more than what we've seen the past 2 years? I'm not sure it is. I feel like he's getting drafted as if people are expecting him to basically do like 20% more than what he did last year, but nothing material has changed. His role hasn't changed. His skills haven't changed. You know, like you mentioned, if anything, maybe regressed a little bit with his 3-point shooting last year. I just don't see the high ceiling for Bridges. Maybe it could be there if he was on a team where, you know, he was the true number two scoring option. But at best, he's number four on this team, and I wouldn't even put him there.
I get why people – so, like, there's a top 50 player in there, and that's, like, if he hits all the highs that he's hit throughout his career. So if he averages 14 a game with, like, 2.5 assists and the 1.6 steals – and the one block and the two threes and the high feet, like that's in there and it's happened, but never in the same season. So I get why some people are like, well, I believe in his talent overall. The Suns are committed to him. Maybe he'll have that year and he'll be ranked like 50. But I can't draft him there, assuming that will happen. So that's why, again, if I can get him at like, I'm a cool taking him at 70. I'm fine with that. But anything significantly more than that, I think is a little bit aggressive for someone who is, again, definitively a role player, who's low usage. He's a low usage role player. Okay. Before we jump into our Central Division fantasy preview, a word from our friends at Caesars. With the NFL kicking off and the NBA season nearing, today is the best time to try Caesars Sportsbook. Anyone who is at least 21 years old and in a licensed Caesars Sportsbook state can create a new account and redeem the Caesars Sportsbook promo code ROTO15. That's ROTO15. The promo code gives new users a risk-free first bet up to $1,500. Visit Caesars.com/sportsbooks or download the Caesars Sportsbook app today. Don't forget to use the promo code ROTO15 when signing up. That's ROTO15. Let's jump into the Central Division fantasy preview. This is Indiana, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Shannon's Detroit Pistons, and the Chicago Bulls. Let's start with Indiana. This is a team that is sort of in flux because of the trade rumors surrounding both Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. Russell Westbrook's been a name that's floated out there. Obviously, Westbrook would probably be waived if that happened. But for now, both Hield and Turner are on the team. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were more of like trade deadline flips, so they could still be on the team later. I'll give you a little bit of runway here. We have Tyrese Haliburton, Buddy Hield, and Miles Turner as the main fantasy guys on this team right now. Give me your first thoughts on either of those guys, any of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about each of those three last week. And yeah, I think, you know, Ken, you and I are all fairly high on each of them. You know, I would draft – Haliburton's easily a top 20 guy for me. I'm going to pick him at the turn in a lot of drafts and be happy with it. Just kind of depends on who else is there. Still like Lillard and Trae Young more than Halliburton. But if we're going, you know, if those two are gone, I love Halliburton at the turn or with, you know, in general top 15. Heald going to that 70, 75, 80 range. I think he's going to be better than that. He could very well lead this team in scoring. And then Turner, there's still a ceiling that hasn't been realized with Turner. He's obviously going to be an elite source of blocks. His ADP, in my opinion, is actually crazy low on most sites. I mean, you have Turner going an underdog for best ball, at least crazy low, 93rd. I understand why, because you're looking at point totals, you know, the total fantasy points for that point-based league. He's not as impressive as he is in a categorical rotisserie league where he carries that one category so strongly. But I still think there's that upside where Turner can go out and, you know, be a 17 points, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks, hit more three-pointers than he has in the past. So I love him. We're also our projections rankings are very high on Turner. We have him as like a top 40 player. The only format where he approaches that ADP value is Yahoo at 49.
Yeah, if you put aside his rookie season, 8 cat, he's never ranked lower than 70th ever. Last year he was 38. If there's going to be a season that he is featured and that he will grab more rebounds and that he will get more touches, it is this season. But I like him in fantasy this year as well. Let's jump to Milwaukee. Milwaukee, maybe the most boring team in the NBA this offseason, did absolutely nothing. Drafted Marjon Beauchamp. That's really about it. Nothing has changed with this team. I struggle to even really give you any take at all on this team. Chris Middleton dealing with a hand injury or a knee. I can't even honestly remember at this point. He might miss the start of the regular season. Again, maybe you drop his ADP, like, or maybe you drop his draft stock like a half round. Maybe.
Wrist surgery in July for a torn ligament. He's expected, and this is as of July 12th, so we should be getting an update as training camp nears, but expected to be ready for the start of the regular season or near it. I'll tell you, I'm dropping Middleton like one or two full rounds. And it's on top of him only playing 66 games last year. I like Middleton a lot, and I think that this Bucks team actually need him to be healthy and to be the 25 and 5 guy he's been the past few years for them to be an elite team. But I do worry just a little bit. He is getting older. He's in his 30s now. A lot of players, especially players with. You know, his type of skill set, I will say, not the most athletic player. They do start to fade when they reach this stage of their career. So I still like him a lot. But, can you pick him with a top 50 pick, a top 40 pick? I'd say top 40, no way. But he's going 41, 45, 48, 47, depending on the format. That's a little bit risky. I might be dropping him about one round.
Last three seasons, he's ranked 33, 35, 35 in per game value. Truly a rock in fantasy. But I agree. You give him like 45 or 50. That's probably the safer call. There, Cleveland Cavaliers. There's a lot going on here when they traded for Donovan Mitchell. They have a fantastic starting lineup of Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and then insert player X as the small forward who is either going to be Okoro or LeVert, or even Chetty Osmond, maybe, if they're feeling crazy. I've seen Mobley go pretty early, like third round. And I'm also seeing, you know, some drops for Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland. Do you have any strong leans on kind of what's happening with those guys' values?
Yeah, I mean, Mobley definitely is – he's – the second cab off the board, right? Donovan Mitchell's going to be the first cab off the board. I would say Mitchell's Mitchell's draft capital has dropped slightly since the trade. He was, you know, a firm top, you know, top 25 pick before the trade to Cleveland. I've seen him dip a little bit since then. He's still going 20 and 22 on Yahoo and ESPN, 26 on Underdog. But that 26 on Underdog is trending in the wrong direction. It was definitely a top 25 pick a few weeks ago. I have trouble picking Mitchell with the top 30 pick now. I think that's where you have to pick him, and that's the right place to pick him. I just like other options better now that he's in Cleveland. Garland, kind of the same thing. I mean, Garland's value is all over the place, though. I'll see him get picked with a top 30 pick in some drafts. People reach for him, which I actually think that reaching for him before the Donovan Mitchell trade made a lot of sense. Now I know I landed him with like pick 49 or so last night in a best ball draft. I love him in that range, but he's really right around 40 is where you have to pick him on most platforms. He's higher than that on Yahoo, 25. I feel like Garland's good in the 40 range. Basically, him and Mobley are kind of side by side. But from a fantasy standpoint, yeah, here you go. Who has the highest ceiling? Mitchell, Garland, or Mobley for this season?
This season, I think it's Donovan Mitchell, but just because he's been there and done that before. Like he's out of all these guys, he's had the best fantasy season. And it's not like his team. I think it's still Garland's team, but I'm worried Garland's going to take a small step back. Not that significant. I think he'll still be maybe he'll be a more efficient player, stuff like that. Mobley's upside, unfortunately, is a little bit capped by Jared Allen being there. The rebounding upside is not quite there. The shot blocking upside is not as much there as if Mobley was playing center. Word on the street is that he can shoot threes very well now. I'll believe it when I see it. But I think it is still Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then, you know, so outside of the top three, you Jared Allen, we'll call it they have their top four guys. They're all locks, right? I do believe Okoro will start for them. I don't believe he's worth drafting in all but the deepest of leagues. Yeah. And then LeVert and Kevin Love, probably the only two bench players that are going to be worth any kind of fantasy consideration from the Cavs. But again, that's for deeper formats. Most standard 12 and 10 teamers on Yahoo or ESPN will not need. I mean, you can still draft LeVert. He is definitely a top 120 pick, top 100 in a lot of formats. But Kevin Love, 10 team weeks, definitely not worth it. Deeper formats, best ball, he's worth a flyer there. He had a great season last year as their sixth man.
Yeah, both of those guys are essentially six men but have injury issues, which is a tough combination to draft inside the top 100. All right, let's go to your Detroit Pistons, who just traded for Bojan Bogdanovic, gave away Kelly Olynyk and Saben Lee with no draft picks. Just a straight-up Olynyk and Saben Lee for Bojan trade. I like this a lot, but I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, I mean, speaking on the Bogdanovic trade specifically, it's tough. You would think that getting Olynyk out of town and would free up minutes in the front court for Marvin Moneybags or Isaiah Stewart. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. I believe before this trade, the plan was start Stewart, start Bagley side by side, and then you have Olynyk as the backup. You know, either one of Bagley or Stewart can slide to the four in that scenario. I'm curious to see how this works out with Bogdanovic. I do believe Bogdanovic is basically a lock to start, which means either Bagley or Stewart have to go to the bench. A lot of folks think it's going to be Bagley. For defensive reasons, I look at the money the Pistons gave him, and I think Bagley is going to be the starting option. He gives Cade Cunningham a lob threat that is not there with Isaiah Stewart and absolutely not there with Bogdanovic. And Bogdanovic, yeah, he helps space the floor. He's a good fit with this team. He could see some minutes at the three, but I think it'll be the three and the four, splitting time between there. He's not going to take minutes away from Sadiq Bey. So it's a tough, it doesn't clear up any kind of rotational concerns you might have had about the Pistons. If anything, it makes it murkier. But for Bogdanović specifically, he's going to see a step back. He's not going to be asked to score as much as he was in Utah. You know, he'll still be that three-point threat and a contributor on that end. But I do not expect him to average 18 points per game like he did last year. I think he's going to be probably more like the 15-point per game range with the Pistons. You know, Cade's really the star. He's the main fantasy attraction with the Pistons. You're going to have to pick him with a top 35 pick depending on the format.
Yeah.
35 on Yahoo, 29 on Underdog, 45 on Fantrax. It's rare. I've seen him drop to the 40s only like once in the 50 or so best ball drafts I've done so far this year. Usually you're picking him with the top 30 pick in that scenario. I think we're going to see huge strides from Cade in year two. You know, 20 plus points and 5-6 rebounds and assists per game are a lock in my opinion. You know, the other options, Sadiq Bey, he'll be pretty safe. Efficiency concerns, field goal percentage in particular, but it'll be a huge source of threes. Probably the second highest scoring option on this team. Jaden Ivey, risky. He's going like in the 120 range for a lot of drafts that I've been a part of. I think him and Mathurin with the Pacers are kind of a coin flip. Either one of those rookie guards would be a good option. It's kind of your personal preference, whichever one you want. But neither one of them in the same position as like Banchero to have immediate day one success. And then, you know, Stuart Bagley, that's a coin flip situation as well. Stuart probably offers a little bit of a safer floor with some of his defensive contributions, but I think Bagley actually has the higher ceiling, especially if he can hit threes or actually contribute on the defensive end of the court. But again, those are guys who are you're picking as like end of your bench big man fillers, and they're all risky. But you know, if the one thing I do know after Bogdanović is I expect hardly any. I don't expect Jalen Duran to really fit in and be a fantasy contributor at all this season after Bogdanović was acquired.
Yeah, there was. It sounds like Duran might be in the G League a little bit, so I don't think he's draftable. As much as I liked him for this team, but it was just like, yeah, now you got Bagley and Stewart and Nerlens is still there, and it's a tough situation to navigate for a rookie. But yeah, I agree with everything you said, Cade. I understand why he's going that early. He ranked 50th last year, 8 cat per game. And that's even including the bad like first 2 months of the season that he had. So him going in that 25 to 35 range makes total sense to me. All right, Chicago Bulls. Not a lot changed here, although just being healthy will be big for them. The problem with that is that Lonzo Ball is already hurt again. Undergoing surgery next week on the 28th. He will be reevaluated 4 to 6 weeks later. This seems probably like kind of a cleanup surgery issue, but this was a meniscus injury gone wrong. Pretty similar to the thing that caused Wiseman to miss all of last season for the Warriors. I doubt Lonzo Ball is going to be ready for the season, but they have so many options at point guard that I don't even know how to decipher. What do you do about it? Like, they got Dragic in the building now. Is he even that good anymore? Caruso is there, who I do like for fantasy, but how high can you even draft him? Dosunmu. You know, Dosunmu is fine, yeah. But really nothing changed for this team.
No, I agree. And Dosunmu, you know, maybe he sees a little bit more value, can be drafted in some 12 or 14 team leagues now that there's the injury concerns with Lonzo Ball. But I agree. I mean, I'm not expecting – my evaluation of this team is not that much different than what we saw last year. LaVine, DeRozan, Vooch are all going to do what they do, be fine. Lonzo Ball, I'm not touching him now. You know, given the injury struggles last year and where things are – what we're looking at heading into the season this year, I'll just avoid him altogether. You know, you can give a slight bump to Dosunmu and Dragic and Caruso, But you know, if you're looking at breakout potential or someone who can surprise on this team, it's for me, Patrick Williams. Talked about him as one of my sleepers last week. You know, he's I believe he's what a lot of Mikal Bridges backers. That's what Patrick Williams, what they believe in, that's what Patrick Williams could turn into this year. Now, I think he could be a less efficient version of Bridges, essentially, for the Bulls. And with that, you know, that holds plenty of fantasy value. And he's basically, you know, a steal, a late-round dart right now where you can get him. Yeah, it's just that flyer in the 150, 140, 150 range. So if your league's deep enough to roster that many players, I think Patrick Williams is a great late round dart.
Yep. Really strong late round option. That'll do it for us, everybody. Thank you for joining us on the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast. It is presented by Caesars. See you guys.